TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Warning. The Outsider's Edge contains strong opinions, unconventional views, and contrarian stances. Listen, if you dare.
Hey, yo!
Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Ain't nobody really the gorilla, I said. Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Ain't nobody really the gorilla. Gorilla tactics, whoa.
Guess who's back? Back again.
As we were brought in by the fire tones of the Tompkins and apparently Eminem out of nowhere song, we give out deference to both, I guess. It's your boy Rancid K. Ray Cash. We'd like to thank you for listening to another episode of The Outsider's Edge. Before we go any further, let me introduce my co-host, my co-pilot, my Kota to my Kenny, Mr. Kyle Morris.
I mean, you know, we took a little bit of a health hiatus. We had to take care of our mental selves a little bit. And I just wanted to, you know, serenade everybody back with some dulcet tones.
Now, for the record, I normally would try to introduce you as the sage of the squared circle.
But my predictions have been ass lately.
And you have been challenged by our good friend Clive from the Ricky and Clive Show. He has taken your crown forcibly. Like, he broke into the crib and, like, he said, call the cops. And we ain't do shit, so.
I'm more mad at him for coming stateside without telling us.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
If he broke into my house, that means he was in the United States and he didn't tell you boys. And that is not forgivable.
Good point. That's a good point.
But, you know, we're going to let it go because, like, we got a pretty NXT-heavy episode for y'all this week. We got lots of important shit to talk about. But first...
Hold on. Before you go there, let me say this, because I want you to journalism. But before you go there, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention, because AEW had quite possibly their best show they've had since they've had Dynamite last night. I do not want people to think that we're not talking about that on purpose. There are more talking points about NXT right now than AEW, because everything in AEW, for the most part, worked last night. They set up the pay-per-view well. Cody finally got beat Wardlow and had the great match in the great spot. So now that match with MJF is on. Matt Jackson had a great battle royal, and now the Young Bucks are going to fight Hangman and Kenny Omega for the tag titles. Big Swole and Chris Statlander stood up to neither role, so I'm looking like something's going to happen there. Like, there's no talking points of discussion. Like, it was all cool. So I don't want people to think that we're just ignoring them on purpose.
Also, I've admittedly got the show actively in my DVR, haven't gotten to it yet, so, like, I don't want to come in uninformed. So we're going to stick to the things that we've already seen.
And speaking of things we've already seen, there was a pay-per-view this weekend.
There was, but I wasn't going to start there. I was going to start with the breaking tragedy.
Yes.
That is, once again, ladies and gentlemen, we have entered a WrestleMania season where our boy, the great Samoa Joe, was hot. And once again, during the WrestleMania season, our boy, Samoa Joe, is hurt.
It's becoming a reoccurring thing, and it's not just WrestleMania season, but that always seems to be one of the moments where it always happens. It's like he's kind of snake bitten. Recently he was filming a commercial for WWE, was supposed to take some type of bump through a table for the stunt, and hurt his head. And the report did not say it was a concussion, but I can't think of anything else when you hear hurt his head, other than concussion. And that's an assumption, but it's, I think it's a fair one given his history. It's really disappointing. And WWE seems to have pivoted because of Monday Night Raw. Owens and the Viking Raiders added the Street Profits to their kind of quest to rid the world of the, of Seth Rollins and his disciples. They've kind of pushed Joe off to the side on screen, which makes a lot of sense seeing as now he's hurt. We were kind of talking before the show, and the sad thing is we don't want to have this conversation, but it's important to have. Samoa Joe has been wrestling for the better part of 25 years.
Samoa Joe is in his 40s.
Yes. He's been wrestling at least since the late 90s. Probably a little earlier than that. And
him and AJ are about the same age and started doing it around the same time.
Him, AJ, Daniels, and Kazarian all about rock with the same time. So it's time to have the conversation, because these aren't joint issues. These aren't tendon issues. These aren't knee issues or, you know, issues with parts of his body that can heal normally. These
are recurring concussions in an era when we know so much about the long-term damage of repeated head trauma. And we don't want to have this talk, but, like, one, we care about people more than we care about entertainment.
Absolutely. So, like,
our value is always going to be placed on the performer as a person.
Absolutely.
But number two, Joe has so much else to give to the wrestling industry that doesn't require him to maintain an active full-time role as a competitor. Joe could be an awesome manager. Joe could be a great commentator.
Yep.
Joe could be an agent. Joe could join creative. Joe could probably be a trainer or a booker, because Joe, not only has he been doing it for 20 plus years, Joe is one of the best performers of his generation and is widely considered so by everyone within said generation.
Top to bottom, yeah. And not only is he one of the best, if we want to use that word best, but the word I think that fits him better is he's one of the most versatile.
He gets it.
Yeah.
He understands the business in pretty much every way. I think if it were me, the role that I would want to give him is, you know, we all know that the late, great Dusty Rhodes always used to do promo class, quote unquote.
The American Dween.
I would have Samoa Joe working in the Performance Center, primarily teaching these kids how to fucking talk. Because, you know, there's one thing that Samoa Joe could always do, even with scripted shit, was find a way to make it sound convincing, was to give it some grit.
Yeah.
Like,
personality.
Yeah, he could be such a valuable tool teaching these kids how to use character and deliver promo.
And what I love about Joe's promo ability is his diction, the way he says words, the speed with which he speaks. Those are little tricks that you just don't learn overnight. The irony of that is, and most of us in the know, if you're listening to this show, you're probably you're a smart fan, or you're a smarter Mark, or whatever you want to call yourself. You know some ins and outs of the business. You know that Dusty's promo class has now become kind of legendary, with not only how good, well, the Dream is the best talker ever. I'm sorry. I think
fact.
He is.
Only fact.
But on top of that, the dearth of people that he had in his classes at the time are the top stars in all promotions right now. But think about if Joe does go to NXT, and we're booking this man. And I want to get away from that, but we've booked him into his next career, kind of like they did with Graves. But just imagine if Joe was and did go and train. They have three of the best modern talk. They'll have three of the best modern talkers down there training. They'll have Joe. They'll have Regal. And then they'll have, who was the third one that I was thinking that's down there now that I just lost it. But like that, they are, I know. And I live podcasting, y'all. My bad. But they're stacked down there. And oh, Road Dogg. Road Dogg is one of the best talkers of a generation.
I was just gonna wait for you to get it. I just wasn't gonna give it to you.
Look, man. My brain is sleep deprived. I've lost brain cells. Foley lost brain cells because of chair shots. I lost brain cells because of no sleep. The only reason I think this is a real conversation to have, besides his health, is they pulled Graves away from the business. They pulled Paige away from the business. They pulled Brian away from the business. So there is precedent for this now.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to be consistent and you're going to say that you really take things like head trauma seriously and stuff like that, then you got to do it for everybody. You can't just pick and choose and only do it for some. So like it's time to really truly take a look at that, as much as we hate to do so. But you know, let's not dwell on like all of the sadness. Let's get into some of these crazy NXT talking points.
So NXT TakeOver was this past weekend. Keith Lee and Dominik Dijakovic had what essentially could be looked at as Superman versus General Zod from Man of Steel type match. Keith Lee retained. Dakota Kai faced Tegan Nox in her thong. Had to say it. Tegan was supposed to win, but Raquel Gonzalez out of nowhere chokeslammed Tegan into the abyss and the oblivion. Dakota Kai won that match. Finn Balor, the Prince, Finn Balor, like, humbled the living hell out of Johnny Gargano and beat the tar out of him in a very competitive long match, but very definitive win. Finn Balor won that. Rhea Ripley defended her NXT Women's Championship against Bianca Belair, who is Black History in the making. That woman is a gem.
Excellence.
She's not just Black History and Black Excellence. She's history and excellence without the pronoun.
Oh, absolutely. But specifically, you want to know what hashtag Black Excellence looks like?
Bianca Belair. Had a great, what you could consider a hoss match for two women that aren't overly big.
They're not Rhea, big, but they are hosses strong, because they're power wrestlers.
Yes. Yes. Wonderfully said. Rhea retained and was subsequently attacked by Charlotte, who Charlotte attacked not only Rhea but Bianca as well after the match. The Broserweights, they usurped Red Dragon, the Undisputed Era. Finally, Pete Dunne winning the tag titles and Matt Riddle getting a championship. And apparently, in the party, the Dusty Cup failed a wellness test and is suspended for 30 days. Adam Cole versus Tommaso Ciampa. Daddy indeed did not come home because Uncle Johnny snuck in and stole it from Daddy. And Adam Cole defended and finished the night as champion. TakeOver Portland. Shout out to the Portland crowd.
Yeah, they were real into it, which is great because that proves that being on TV is helping.
Not only that, but it proves that, like, I know they're not going to tour for a while because it doesn't make financial sense, but they could.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, Portland was great all night. How do we want to handle these? How do we want to handle the talking points? Which order do you want to go in? I'll let you pick.
So we not just speaking straight from TakeOver, but going into NXT last night, NXT on USA. We've kind of broken down the NXT situation into four major talking points. I think we can start off with probably the one that's the most definitive now. Rhea Ripley versus Charlotte Flair is official for the NXT Championship at WrestleMania.
And it looks a lot to us anyway, like there's a good chance of some Bianca involvement in a lot of this, especially after Charlotte jumped both of them.
And last night on NXT, Bianca interrupted Chelsea Green and Caden Carter's match, Kanye West style. I'm happy for you. I'm going to let you finish. But Charlotte Flair and such, and basically finally ended it with, I'm going to beat that ass. Mm-hmm.
Again, black excellence.
Oh, my God. She's amazing. So, you know, the night it happened, there was a bit of an uproar among Bianca's fans and among a large part of the black contingent. Because, and this isn't just specifically to Bianca, but I want to leave it specifically to Bianca for this conversation. But oftentimes, when there is a black star that's on the rise, that's ready to reach a certain apex, and they keep getting passed over, sometimes, and I get it, sometimes the fan base gets a little skittish, right? Naomi is a great example of that on the main roster on SmackDown. Bianca's situation, I think, well, let me ask you like I asked Clive yesterday. I was on Ricky and Clive's show yesterday. If you were to separate all three of them, right, the Queen Charlotte Flair, the Nightmare Rhea Ripley, and Bianca Belair, right, you would separate all three of them, which one of them to you would be considered the weakest from a character standpoint going into a prospective triple threat?
Yeah, can I be 100 with you?
That's why I asked.
Charlotte's got the weakest character right now, because what the fuck is it? The fuck is it? Like, she's a classic Royal Rumble challenger in a sense. She won the Royal Rumble. She gets to pick who the fuck she wants to challenge. Cool.
Uh-huh.
But like, who the fuck is Charlotte right now?
So I wasn't expecting that. I think it's Rhea. Charlotte right now
Rhea is the obvious choice. Rhea is the obvious choice because Rhea doesn't really have a character at all. Rhea is just like a champ who fights, and there's not a whole lot to her.
Well, so let me ask you a Charlotte point, and then we'll go back to Rhea. Charlotte is your quintessential established character who doesn't feel they need to continue establishing. Charlotte is the guard. Charlotte is the old guard of the company. And that's crazy seeing Gas Chamber on the main roster for 5-6 years. Charlotte is the established queen of essentially professional wrestling. She's seen it all. She's done it all. She's beat them all. And she basically sits upon her throne and does what she wants when she wants, because she, not only does she feel she's earned it, but genetically she was born for that spot.
I mean, I
get that doesn't really kind of, you know, excite the senses, but also we know it's not, but we also know when it get down to the getting down, Charlotte gonna deliver.
Oh, she great. Like, she, yeah. This is not about her in ring talent. It's just like, there ain't no spice.
Sure. Now, here's the reason why I would have picked Rhea in this conversation is because, while it may be annoying at times, Charlotte can talk. And this is no diss to Rhea Ripley, because I think she is a 9 out of 10. She's a great professional wrestler in ring. She can wrestle as a babyface or as a heel. She has an amazing look. She has a great aura about her. She walks in the room and you instantly look at her. But when it comes to talking, that wasn't the gift she was given. And she can get better. And she's better at talking as a heel. Playing this babyface role right now, it's not connecting. Bianca is gifted in every single thing she does. And she doesn't even know she's good at it yet.
Well, and you know what I think is a difference between Bianca and Rhea and Charlotte right now? Bianca right now has the most presence.
Like, yeah, oh yeah.
Second she's on screen, she feels larger than life. She feels like a star. You just ooze star out of her. Charlotte is, you know, mostly legacy at this point. Like you said, she's seen it all, she's done it all, she's been it all. So, like, she has star, but Bianca oozes star. She feels like the biggest deal right now.
I would agree, which is why... So let me tell you what this reminds me of. And I know we tend to talk negatively about this young man on our show quite often for legitimate reasons, for fair reasons. But this reminds me of WrestleMania 29 when Rock versus Cena, it was supposed to be one time only in 28. Rock comes back, faces Punk for the title at Royal Rumble. Punk does the honors. Rock becomes champ. Fastlane the next month, Punk does the honors again. Going into WrestleMania, everybody thought it'd be a triple threat because we can't have twice in a lifetime, and Punk is the hottest act in the business. Just came off of a 432, I believe, day reign. I think that was the number.
Yep.
And Punk versus Cena on Monday Night Raw to see who will go to WrestleMania. Cena wins clean. Punk goes to fight The Undertaker. This reminds me of that situation because Bianca, you could even speak last year to the Charlotte, Ronda, Becky situation. Although many people would have been happy with Charlotte, with Becky versus Ronda alone, they needed Charlotte to have to add the extra element, in my opinion. If you leave out Bianca in the situation, especially going into the very first WrestleMania defense of the NXT Women's Championship, and especially given how all three of these women have been intertwined since, honestly, November. Right?
Oh, yeah, because Bianca showed out at Survivor Series.
Yeah. I just think it's a bit of a travesty. I mean, and I'm biased. I love Bianca. So is this my bias speaking?
Oh, hell no. She's the biggest star. If WrestleMania is supposed to be about the biggest stars and the biggest stories, she oozes biggest star right now, and this is the biggest story in that division. So, like, she should be in it. That seems real obvious to me.
But I also think she'll make the match better.
Oh, she'll definitely make the match better because Rhea and Charlotte wrestle the exact same style.
That's what I'm thinking.
Like, Rhea and Charlotte wrestle the exact same style. So you're going to watch the Spider-Man meme in match form, whereas
go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, whereas Bianca she has that slightly different hossy, I'm doing gorilla press slams and shit.
Well, not just gorilla press slams. I'll gorilla press slam you, and then I'll go do a 450. Did you hear? You know, she did Xavier Woods' Up Up Down Down show, the Superstar Save Point. And she was explaining how the reason she can do a 450 is because she can't just do a regular frog splash because it's weird. She has to put a tuck in it. So she has to make it harder for her. And she did a 450 in her first week of training. Mind you, she didn't watch wrestling. She didn't train wrestling. She came off of CrossFit.
Yeah, but it's not fair. But here's what I'll say. And this is admittedly biased because I attended the University of South Carolina, but Bianca Belair was an SEC track and field cross country athlete. That girl, from the moment she walked in the door, was ready in terms of athletics. Yes. Because you don't make it to that level of track and field cross country without being one of the best, because those universities send people to the Olympics.
And she went to SC. She went to A&M.
I thought it was Tennessee.
She graduated from Tennessee, but she went to A&M before Tennessee.
But yeah, and like, she didn't just go. She was all conference.
Full ride. Yeah.
All conference.
Would you still have Rhea defend the title the night before a Takeover Tampa?
No. And here's why no. Here's why no. Because if I know the modern WWE machine the way that I do, if they have Rhea defend the title the night before at Tampa Rants, they will have Rhea and Bianca. No, they'll have Rhea and Bianca go one-on-one in Tampa at TakeOver, and then they won't include Bianca in a WrestleMania match because that's the modern machine right now. And yeah, that would make me rub my temples and rage.
That's interesting. I want to expound on that. So you're telling me you'd rather Bianca get her moment in a triple threat match at Mania instead of get her moment singular the night before?
I would rather not risk Bianca not being included in Mania, because I think if they have Rhea do the night before, I think they'll do Rhea Bianca one-on-one, and then they'll do Rhea versus Charlotte one-on-one the next night. And I would rather Bianca get included, and my fear would be that she won't be if they have Rhea defend the title. So instead, I would have some kind of number one contenders something or other at TakeOver the night before.
Oh, so like Charlotte versus Bianca, winner goes to Mania, and then maybe like
No. I mean like future contender.
Okay. Okay.
Number one contender. Like have Candice versus Io versus Mia.
Because Io Shirai and Candice LeRae singularly is the most underutilized person in the entire company.
Yes, she is.
And Io isn't underutilized because she's been utilized heavily, but she's been MIA for a while, and that's a bit of a detriment to her because she's one of the best wrestlers in the company, man or woman.
So I'm saying have a fatal four-way at TakeOver the night before. Candice versus Mia versus Io versus Dakota.
Well, Tegan and Dakota got to finish their story.
Oh, well then fine. Have the triple threat match for the number one contender.
Okay.
And then have Tegan and Dakota finish their story, and we get two women's matches on the card.
Well, that's what I'm hoping. If we don't get Rhea defending, I'm hoping it'll be two women's matches on the card. That makes most sense.
Well, but you know, regardless of how they do that, you know, I think this is a good opportunity for us to segue into one of our other topics and takeaways from TakeOver, which is, y'all, it's really time to consider changing this formula. Like, it's really time for us to consider changing the formula. And if you don't know what we mean by the formula, I mean, if you're listening to this show and you don't know what we mean by the formula, I'm confused. But if you don't know what we mean by that, what we mean is takeovers have a very clear formula. Takeovers are always, how many matches, Rance?
They're normally five. They gave us six, but they're normally
occasionally
five.
Occasionally they give us six, but when they give us six, the sixth match is normally some shit like so-and-so debuts and squashes somebody. Or
normally, yeah.
Or whatever.
This show was an anomaly, but normally, yes, five shows. Five matches.
Yeah, so typically they are five matches. Normally, all of the titles get defended during the night.
And one grudge match.
And a grudge match.
And the grudge match is always the second match on the card.
Yep. And as the night goes on, every match is 20 minutes plus, even if it doesn't need to be.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, we get what we got this past weekend, which was not a bad show. Nothing about it was a bad show.
I think it's one of their best shows ever, honestly.
Yeah, it was a wonderful takeover. We're not sitting here saying it was a bad show, but the cracks are showing in this formula, because for our money, the two best matches of the night were the first two matches on the card because they were the right fucking length.
20 minutes and 13 minutes respectively, yes.
Like, runtime really matters, y'all. And if you don't understand why runtime matters, think about the way that WWE tells you stories. WWE normally does arcs within matches. There's a first match in the feud after we've set things up. There's the settle the score match, and then there's the blow-off match. Mm-hmm. Now, we could sit here and talk all day about how it might be time to change that formula, too, and how sometimes it's okay to have a boom one-off and we move on to other things.
That's wrestling, though. That's not just WWE.
No,
yeah,
it is. It is. That's so, like, that's, you know, it is what it is. But if that's the way you tell me a story, and that's how we structure it, you can't make every match in that story 30 minutes long. Because how the fuck are you building on anything? How are you taking it one step further? How are you making this more meaningful the second or the third time I'm seeing it?
So I want to add to your point, but I want to counter something real quick. But I'm going to ask you a question while I'm going to respond by asking you a question. Do you think the issue is the formula, or do you think the issue lies with the three most abusers of the situation, being Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano, and Tommaso Ciampa? And I ask you that, and if I may give Exhibit A to the court. Think before those three got their rise, this was never an issue. But in the past 2 years, those three have dominated the main events, the main event. And it's been some of the best stories ever told in the brand's history. But the Adam Cole, Johnny Gargano feud, I don't think will ever get the due that it deserves with the storytelling, because of the bloat. That feud had two out of three falls matches in it.
Yeah.
Two. Yeah. The first match was a 2 out of 3 falls match.
It's gross.
You know what I mean? Everything was great. Not saying it wasn't, but it just was at a point too much. It was, let me tell you what it was. I have kids, right? If I give my kids ice cream for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, they'll be excited about it. If I give it to them for a week straight, Daddy, I'm sick of ice cream.
Yeah.
It's not special anymore.
Okay, so I think my counter to your counter, mm-hmm. some of the blame is on them, but it's not so much them specifically as much as let's think about how NXT has changed.
Well, yeah, Hunter in and terms Sean, of
its,
yeah.
Well, no, not that. In terms of its structure within the company.
Okay.
Whereas in years past, it was very much the developmental brand, and people would be there for a couple of months, and then you get called up to the main roster, you're not there anymore, and new people crop up in your place, and do their own thing.
Speaking of that, they had their own formula with that, right? New Hill debuts, wins a couple of matches, beats the new champion gets called up, New Hill debuts. So yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, so like that. Now, though, it has gone from the developmental brand to the third brand.
Yeah.
And not third like WWECW third, but like just legitimate alternate third brand.
On the same playing field, yeah.
Yeah. So like it is now, because it's the third brand, people don't just get like called up out of there anymore. And because of that, we've seen Cole, Gargano, Ciampa over and 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 over again, because this time 3 years ago, acts like that were getting called up to the other side. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense, but I think both situations can exist in the same plane but be different, because that's a real issue, is the roster bloat. Now, we only say it's a bloat because I think we only say it's a bloat because we're so used to that being such a living roster, a moving, breathing roster, because the parts move so often. But never in the history of NXT as we know it in this iteration have the top people literally, like the Undisputed Era has been dominating NXT for 3 years now.
Yeah.
You know, and we've never had that.
Yeah, no, in years past. Right. Yeah, no, in years past.
What, a year?
Yeah, no, in years past, they would have stayed there for, like, a year, and they would have been called up to the, like, Raw or SmackDown and been running roughshod over that shit until one of them turned face, probably Roddy, and broke the stable up.
So that's one problem in his own right, and I'm with you on that. But I want to talk specifically more into the wrestling style of the main events, wrestling main event style of NXT. And I think it's... Well, first and foremost, let's say this. Shawn Michaels becoming one of the main trainers there has really kind of added an extra dynamic because we know Shawn, I think Shawn's the greatest in-ring performer of all time. If nothing else, we know Shawn might be the best entertainer of all time from a wrestling standpoint. But Shawn was
a big believer in the epic match formula.
He was the pioneer of the epic match formula, right? And we can say Hogan was, but Shawn actually did moves. Hogan did, you know, lockups, back rakes, and boots. Shawn actually wrestled.
Hogan wasn't doing, and Hogan didn't really do epic matches either because, like, Hogan ain't out here taking real near falls.
Right, that's what I mean. Yeah, Hogan had moments, but not epic matches. Shawn kind of pioneered that epic match style that John Cena took and ran with. Finisher kickout, finisher kickout, finisher kickout, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Johnny Gargano has mentioned numerous times that Shawn is his favorite, and Shawn has said that Johnny's kind of like the next him. Like his, kind of like the guy who's taken my spirit and like moved on with it, right? Johnny Cole and Gargano are the three, and they come from that PWG style, which is very similar, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do everything you can in the match, hit every spot you can, kick out, kick out, kick out, and then once you got him at the biggest crescendo, keep going 15 more minutes and then end the match.
And you know
what? I think it's something specific about those three guys.
Well, here's what it is. Those are indie guys still wrestling in an indie style on a mainstream brand. And the reason I say it's an indie style is because indies, by their nature, are touring brands.
Yes.
Because they don't do TVs, they're touring. And it goes back to the territory. Well, and it goes back to the territory days. You used to see the same type of thing because the thing is, this company is only going to be in this town once for the next 3 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give these people literally all the shit I got. Because who the fuck knows when I'm coming through again.
But they stay in Full Sail, so like that, you've got to change that up.
You're right. You are right. I'm not saying that that's okay, but I'm just saying, like, is it something about those guys? Yes, it is. What it is they got to the top as top indie guys who then were pushed to the top because they were incredibly popular top indie guys. They're worthy, but that's why they were popular because they were worthy.
Sure.
But like, as a result of that, if that's the style that has gotten me to the dance, and if that's the style that has gotten me rewarded within the dance, and it's gotten me praise and lauding from people within my company that I respect and look up to, what incentive do I have to do it different?
No, you're not wrong at all. You're absolutely on point, and that's I'm sure that's what it is. So then I think some of the blame needs to be put on Hunter and Sean and Road Dogg and Matt Bloom. Because, and I say that, let me give you the catalyst for that. It isn't just strictly the matches that happened at TakeOver. But look at what we're going to most assuredly for TakeOver Tampa. Johnny Gargano versus Tommaso Ciampa again. Now, I've shouted this motherfucker out so much in this show, we might as well make him a part of it. But if you read Clive's column on Lords of Pain this week, he breaks down why this is actually a stroke of genius because of the literal flipping of the story, and he's right, but that doesn't take away from the guttural kind of disdain when you think again. And I think
part of what makes it worse is if you really think about it, their saga wasn't that long ago.
It was a year ago, yeah.
like, it'd be different if, you know, I'll give you an example of the type of fight on site rivalry that they have, but like, outside of these guys weren't a tag team, they got Triple H and The Rock beef. But you know what the thing about Triple H and The Rock was? They did their shit every couple, 3 years.
I don't want to one up you, but I think the more apt, the more apropos comparison is Triple H and Shawn Michaels.
Okay, yeah, no, Hunter and Shawn because right, is a better because they were
because
friends,
of the love those. And then the hatred. Yeah,
but
and if you and real quick, if you. Real quick, if you think about it, both guys, Johnny and Tommaso, mirror both guys, Sean and Hunter.
All right. But even again, if you think about it, Hunter and Sean only fought each other every 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
They didn't do it all the fucking time. And this just feels like, okay, so we just got through last year with this epic match saga that included you spitting on this dude's wedding ring and throwing it into the crowd.
One of the greatest spots in history.
All right. Clive still will never forgive him for that.
He's still pissed off about it. Yeah.
Still angry. But at the same time, now we are just a few months later and you running this back?
So I can forgive anything with context. And they will definitely most assuredly tell a great story on the way to it, and the match will be great. My fear is, and I'm going to say something that might be blasphemous to NXT diehards. My fear is that, well, for this situation, I hope it doesn't go any further than Tampa. It's looking like it's going to be a loser leaves town match. So, okay, cool. But those three in general, dare I say, I'm tired of Adam Cole as champ, and I'm tired of the Undisputed Era. Like I'm on that fringe where I love everything they do. I think they're tremendous in the ring. I love the fact that the show has they're an anchor of the show so that you know where the show's going and some semblance of it. But I don't need them to hog the tops of every division for another period of time.
You know what they are?
Evolution?
No. I'm gonna give you like the legit of what they are, right down to the Adam Cole baby. They're Ring of Honor Bullet. They're Ring of Honor Bullet Club.
Oh, the American side, yeah.
They're Ring of Honor Bullet Club.
So
they're the Elite. They're
so Cole, the Bucks, and Hangman.
Cody and Hangman.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're that in the sense that they are just legitimately looming large over the entire show.
Yeah.
And they have been for so long that it's just like, all right, like how long are we gonna do this? Which is why I really loved, you know, what's going on with Strong and Dream, because like Dream has been consistently coming up like one up in the dude, and so it's like, yeah, finally these guys are like not playing from the top.
You know, I don't begrudge them for the reason they signed with AEW, but that's one of the reasons why I'm still a little bummed that Santana and Ortiz signed with AEW, and they're in an amazing spot. They get great matches and great television every week. They're a major part of the major storyline. I don't begrudge them. They definitely made the right call for them. But they would have slided right into literally the top babyface they want to be babyface or heel they want to be heel tag team of NXT would have been that for as long as they wanted. Because look at what they're having to do. They're having to continue to build and create tag teams so that Kyle and Bobby can have somebody to wrestle. Like, but they've brought the grizzled young vets from England and moved them to America just to have another tag team.
But do you know why they've had to do that, though? Do you know why they've had to do that? Because they mismanaged the tag team division on the other shows for so fucking long that anytime you got an established NXT tag team, they just got shot the fuck up. Look at Heavy Machinery. Look at Heavy Machinery as a prime example of what I'm talking about.
American Alpha.
American Alpha.
They were together for what, like 9 months? And they were gone?
Enzo and Cass.
Yeah. That's a great point. That's a great point. That's a great point. Any like team that did any work. Yeah.
They mismanaged the tag divisions on Raw and SmackDown for so long that it was just any team that got momentum in NXT that like proved something was instantly shot up to Raw or SmackDown because those divisions had so many holes in them.
And now they're forcing me to have to hold on waiting for the inevitable amazing heel turn of Pete Dunne when he murders Matt Riddle on live television. Now I gotta wait for like 6 months because y'all ain't got no baby faces these dudes can wrestle.
Yeah, but I mean, how great is that inevitable match? Can we talk about the strong style in that match? Ooh.
I'm telling you, man.
And it will continue to be a struggle, especially now because of AEW, because you know what? Like, legitimately, looking at both companies, if I'm a tag team guy and that's
I'm
my
one AEW.
I'm going to the company that the Bucks run.
Yeah, absolutely. Not even a question.
Shit. The best tag team of my current generation owns this company. Hello. Hi.
So the Usos own AEW? I'm sorry. That's just me being a
hater. You know what? No, that's fair.
I'm an Uso,
number
Mark.
One is the Usos. Number two is probably the New Day.
I'll give the Bucks 1A and Usos 1B for this one reason. Promotions and indies were strictly built around the fact that the Bucks showed up.
Oh, I mean, you got to give the Bucks. I mean, and we've got to give the Bucks their forever props, if for no other reason than what did Ring of Honor look like the second them and Cody and Hangman left?
Absolutely, 100%. Before we talk about Dream, you mentioned formula. I want to segue to kind of a similar conversation about the formula, but not the formula of their main event matches or their takeover matches, but the formula of the TV show. I was disappointed last night. And not just because I'm an NXT fan and I wanted to see them kind of have a good fight against what was, before the show even happened, what was bound to be an amazing AEW show. Dynamite was amazing last night. But not just because of that. I was disappointed because I expected more. I'm really, and this might not just be an NXT thing. It happens a lot at NXT because of their kind of distant history with being developmental. But I don't like showcase matches. But what I mean by showcase matches, a major act versus a much lesser act, and the major act beats them, not squash-wise, but basically a squash, mm-hmm. a glorified squash. I don't like showcase matches for the purpose of just having showcase matches unless you are a debuting wrestler or you're a hoss trying to prove why you're big, right?
Mm-hmm.
Last night we had three. Keith Lee versus Conan Reeves. You had the Grizzled Young Vets versus Raul Mendoza and Joaquin Wilde. And this one was a little less than a glorified squash because it was competitive. But you had the Broserweights versus 1-2, Oney and Danny Burch. On top of that, you had two segments where a slighted face came out. And, well, I guess you could call Bianca Hill, whatever. But a slighted person from the pay-per-view came out and interrupted a match of sorts. Ciampa interrupted Austin Theory before the match could start, beat him up. Bianca interrupted Caden Carter and Chelsea Green, which was a built-up match based on last week. And she didn't interrupt it. She didn't do anything to them, but it interrupted the flow of the match. And then, of course, you had your two... And, of course, you had your two main events, which I think we're going to talk about Dream, but Leo Rush and Jordan Devlin killed it. 30 minutes of just classic wrestling. And I wasn't a fan of the Dream Roddy match, but we'll talk about that here in a second. But that, I just didn't like the structure of the show coming off a pay-per-view. And I mean, is it just me? Am I expecting too much? But is it too much for me to ask for competitive matches where I'm not guaranteed to know the outcome? Or is that just the power dynamic of the way the roster is laid right now? Like, what am I like, what is it?
I think it's a little column A, a little column B, to be perfectly honest. I think some of it is that some of that formatting has gotten a little stale. They didn't structure the show very well last night. But some of it is also they spent a lot of time in the early going of them being televised, because especially because their first shows were in that build-up to Survivor Series.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They spent a lot of time building up a handful of acts. Yeah. And some of those acts, you know, Keith Lee's been in the Royal Rumble and went toe-to-toe with Brock Lesnar. Like, because of that, he now towers over other people in the card in a way that he shouldn't necessarily, because he's been in with bigger names and feels more established.
Well, yeah, but me and you tower over Conor Reeves right now. And that's what it is.
Oh, no, I mean, yeah, you're right. But, like, the point, I think the bigger point I was trying to make is just a handful of guys have been getting, like, they got a lot of time put into establishing them, especially in that build-up to Survivor Series and all that other shit. And so now, you know, and Bianca's another one. She was in the Survivor Series match. She had a great Survivor Series match. And so now her star power, and she was in the Royal Rumble. And, like,
she eliminated the most people.
Yeah, and her star power kind of eclipses a Chelsea right now. And it's just, like, because you spent so much time building up this small part of your core, now the rest of your roster feels like fringe. And, like, not like like attached fringe, like the loose fringes the fuzzies of the sweater that are peeling off.
So let's talk about it. Let's keep it a buck and let's talk about it. I am not a believer in the thought process that WWE tried to counter program AEW to hurt the program because they had the time slot first. I don't give 1, 2, 3, 1,000 any fucks about the network. You still watched NXT at the time slot it was on. You still talked about it the next day. If it was never on USA, we would still talk about NXT on the network Thursday morning. So you can miss me with that shit. But the one real kind of effect of this fan-made war is that NXT drastically changed the way they booked. And yep, you laid it out perfectly. And that, I think, is a real conversation to be had, because I think now it might slightly be hurting the show.
I think where it hurts the show and where it's going to hurt the other shows as well is the role that NXT played meant that you didn't have to introduce people to new talent realistically. The way that they introduced them to the NXT audience, they did vignettes, they let them do squash matches against the guys that weren't ready yet.
Yeah,
they did the showcase shit because it was a developmental brand, and that was the point of developmental, was to establish those names. Absolutely. But now, instead of giving the showcase spots to the people that they need to establish, they're giving the showcase spots to the names that are already there.
Yeah, that's a great point. And then the guys who are already there aren't leaving.
No, and so now they're there for a long ass time. And you know what this feels like? Remember, you know, and it was not that long ago, remember when they still had, you know, Braun doing squash matches? Or how Viking Raiders have been facing nobody tag teams on Raw for like fucking ever, and you just like,
yeah, they faced jobbers and Ryder and Hawkins for like,
and it's like you've been tag team champions at this point and you getting showcases?
Yeah.
Why? Yeah.
I hate it.
And the reason why is because with all of that reliance on NXT as developmental, I think the current creative has not so much lost the ability, but they have forgotten how to establish new people.
I don't think they've forgotten. I don't think they have the opportunity. Like, where are you going to slot? Like, okay, here's a perfect example. Chelsea Green got built up for weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Chelsea Green and the Robert Stone brand in the debut, right? She debuts last week or week before last. I can't remember which, but like, it was a week or 2 weeks ago, fairly recently. And she loses, rightfully so. I love the story they're telling to Caden Carter. Gets rolled up. They have to go back and re-debut. I think it's a great story, right? But think about what happened in her re-debut match, right? The first time she was too cocky, she beat her up, got caught. She comes back, got her head on straight, she knows what she's doing, and what happens? Bianca comes out and is more important and literally shits on the match and says, I'm happy for y'all, I'm going to let you finish, but right now I got to talk. So while I don't care that Bianca did that, I think that was dope. I think it was cool to be different. That was your debut. That was the re-debut of a character who could be something, right? And there's no other time on the show to do that. When else could they have done that? You know? Austin Theory's had one match on NXT, two matches on NXT TV. One, he debuted and got beat up. Another one was his debut showcase. So now he's in a big match with Tommaso Ciampa, so I might help him. But you know he's going to lose to Ciampa next week.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's a situation of we have to book a certain way because we've put so many eggs in this basket that now there's expectation for this basket to be full.
Well, and it comes down to, you know, there's a limited amount of time to put all this shit on.
Mm-hmm.
But I also come back to everybody doesn't have to be on every week. And it's okay.
That's the point.
Like, to me, it's okay if we go a week without, you know, I love Keith Lee. But if we could go a week without Keith Lee and let Chelsea have her actual match and then give Bianca a promo slot later and, like, restructure that whole thing. And that eliminates the Keith Lee showcase that was unnecessary. It allows Bianca to still get her promo time in. And it would have allowed the girls to go out there and have a great fucking match.
So here's the thing, Kyle. For the most part, they do that. You know the one act that takes up that's on the show every week? That's one act. The fucking Undisputed Era. Every other act. Keith Lee misses 2 weeks, pops up, right? Bianca's not on every week. Rhea's not on every week. Finn Balor may be on once a month. Everybody else is doing what you said, except Adam Cole, Roderick Strong, Kyle O'Reilly, and Bobby Fish. And you see now why they're starting to kind of tire in my eyes.
All right, so here's the question then. What do you do?
You want to know the honest answer to that?
Yeah. You think it's time?
I think after Mania, it's time to start transitioning to SmackDown and Raw. And that's going to be hard because you've built your promotion around them. But the beauty of it is Finn Balor is a main roster superstar. The superstar.
So is Charlotte.
So is Charlotte. And what we're now.
Charlotte might be one of the two or three biggest stars in the entire
right.
company.
Well, starting with Balor. Balor is a member of NXT, right? Charlotte, I don't think if she loses, is going to move to NXT. I think this is just a match.
Oh, no.
If she wins, it's different.
I was going to say, if she loses, I think she'll stay on Raw or SmackDown
right.
or whatever. But, like, maybe because she's one of the three or four biggest stars in the company, I just have a hard time seeing her lose.
That's fair.
That match.
That's fair. So if you take away the Undisputed Era, just thinking of top-level talent you would have right now, and I'll assume Charlotte just because of the match. From the male side, you'd have Ciampa, Gargano, you'd have Balor, you'd have Dream, you'd have Lee. And then in that fringe, you can put...
Oh, and Dijakovic.
Well, in that fringe, you could put Dijakovic. You could put Damian Priest. You could put guys like Kushida. You could put those guys in that fringe right underneath who could step up in the right situation, right? With the women, we know the women's division is the best division in that company, right? So Rhea, Charlotte, if she stays, Bianca, Io, Mia, Candice, like Chelsea, Dakota, Tegan. It's ridiculous. We can go on and on and on, right? So here's the caveat, though. You can pull from 205. You can pull from NXT UK. And because they're main roster now, who's to say that Andrade and Zelina don't come back since Charlotte's there? Who's to say that this is a rumor and I don't want it to happen, but what if Sami Zayn and Shinsuke come back? Right? Like, you can always...
You know what you will, well then you know how you facilitate all this, don't you? The next roster shuffle needs to include all three brands.
And I think it will. The reason it didn't this past time was because they hadn't been made a full brand yet.
Right. No, you're right. But I'm just saying the next time that they do a shake up shuffle of the roster, it needs to include NXT as well, and people just need to shuffle.
Do you think, as presently constituted, NXT without the Undisputed Era, and I will cite Charlotte because for the purposes of this conversation, has enough to last a pay-per-view cycle? So what's that, 3 months for NXT?
Easily. I could book a pay-per-view cycle with that roster outside of those guys.
But do you, I'm not, so yes, definitely you can build a pay-per-view, but I'm talking about weekly episodic television.
No, that's what I'm saying. I could build a pay-per-view cycle.
You don't think that it would hurt ratings at all?
I'm not saying it wouldn't hurt ratings at all.
Would it hurt significantly then? Is that maybe a better question?
Maybe in the first week, but I think that there is plenty enough to be done with the roster as it exists to put shit together, because all right, so, let's assume that the loser leaves town scenario is correct and that they also lose, I'm going to assume, Gargano.
Yeah, same here.
So they lose Johnny Gargano. All right, cool. So you've still got Ciampa to build in that main event. You've got all those guys that we've already talked about. You could put any combination of them in a program for that title. You could push Dream.
So just looking at the roster on, let's look at the roster on Wikipedia, right? Of guys that we haven't mentioned, Austin Theory, who has star quality, right? I know he's wrestling right now on 205 and on Raw, but Angel Garza is a guy who's amazing, right? Bronson Reed, who I'm not a huge fan of his, but they like him. Cameron Grimes, Danny Burch, Dijakovic, Swerve Scott.
Yo, you know a feud I just thought of? You know a feud that I could build a pay-per-view around and lots of television? Dream versus Balor. I could build a lot of television around a well-placed feud involving the Dream and the Prince.
Absolutely. I actually think that Balor is the next guy up against Adam Cole. You got another guy who never wrestled NXT, the kid from Saudi Arabia, Mansoor. Killian Dane. He's not on there. He doesn't get much, right?
I always forget him.
You know, so it's possible. Killer Cross just got signed. That's huge. Tim Thatcher, it's there. What's my boy, Dio Madden, Brennan Williams? People are there. They're there. It's just, it's going to take a while for them to get built up. El Hijo de Fantasma, George Bali.
I do love me some King Corno.
So they're there, but I just don't know that I think it's gonna take a while for the major audience to be interested in them. But You want to do some journalism and talk about the dream?
So, you know, first of all, push the dream. But second of all, you know, we're talking about the Undisputed Era, and we're talking about Roddy Strong. And according to our boy, the Dream, there ain't nothing strong about Roderick. That ain't a real man. And he ain't fit to be daddy to hashtag Dream's boy, Toby. And we need to talk about the fiery, fiery, fiery Twitter fingers that the Velveteen Dream has.
So, it's so bad that if Velveteen Dream got jumped at his house, I wouldn't be shocked. So, I'm gonna read.
Be shocked, and I also couldn't, like, pretend he didn't deserve to catch that ass whooping.
I'm gonna read some of these tweets. 3 days ago, there's nothing strong about Roderick. Proof. Marina's last name is Shafir. Sounds like the name of a single broad to me. And there's nothing strong about a man who can't convince his old lady to have not to have his name. Hashtag not a man and not fit to raise hashtag Dreams Boy Troy.
Which, can I just say also, hashtag Dreams Boy Troy is so fucking boss. Like, that is some gangsta ass shit. But you better be prepared to back that shit the fuck up.
Oh no, let's go further. Dear Roderick, one day ago, dear Roderick Strong, in case you enter tonight's fight confused, left pick heels, and it's a picture of some heels with Prince's logo on them. Right pick a baby face, and it's a picture of Dream's tights with Marina and Troy's face with Troy's face circled, a baby face. I am Dream, with love, soon to be Troy's stepfather, kiss emoji.
Oh my.
Okay, hold on. Let's go. Last tweet. 4 hours ago. Don't tell Roddy, shh emoji, but Marina gifted me these lace gloves made from her panties as good luck heading into Wednesday. Safe to say, Lady Luck is on my side and your wife Marina on the other. Kiss emoji. I win. I won. Poof. Be gone.
Don't ever touch a black man's radio.
Okay, so question to you. First and foremost, does it matter who's the face of the heel in the situation? Does it matter to you?
Oh, not even a little bit. Not even at all. This is so great.
So, okay, I think it's important to acknowledge because this is all heel shit.
But they did throw homie off the fucking semi. And
that's what nobody's talking about. They tried to kill him. Right? There's nobody. People just forgot about that.
In storyline, the only reason Dream even went after these motherfuckers is because in storyline, they threw his ass off a semi. And tried to break him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so he came back and was like, fuck y'all. I'm on this shit.
And think about how genius it was. I say it's genius because of this. Any match that you fight against the Undisputed Era, they're going to be ringside. They're going to get involved. That entire match last night, there was no Undisputed Era because he pissed Roddy off so much, Roddy wanted to do it by himself. Genius. Genius. Now, let's talk. Well, you want to have some more fun with this? Because I have a serious question for you.
Okay, before we get serious, here's what I'm going to say. I know a lot of people have a lot to say about the content of the tweets because they're extreme. But, like, I grew up, you know, as you did as well, Rance, I grew up a fan of a lot of hip-hop culture.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's one thing you learn from hip-hop culture or blacktop culture or hardwood culture or any of that shit, it's that when we in the game, it's all fair. It's everything. All legal. There is nothing off limits. If None. I can get in your head with some shit, I am going there. If me and Rance were going one-on-one in a game in a game of basketball.
I'd be talking
shit about his kids. I'd be talking shit about his parents. I'd be talking about, oh, yeah, that's why your girl left you, too. Yeah, I know about that shit.
Everything
to win.
There's only one rule. Make sure you can back up what you say.
Because if you talk that good shit and then you get your ass owned, you better get that mush mouth real quick.
That's the only rule. Otherwise, everything's on the table. You're absolutely right. So I hate to be serious, but So there's been what did you think of the match last night?
I mean, I've seen better matches from both of them. I've seen worse matches from both of them. I walked away entertained.
So that's probably the prevailing theory. I wasn't a fan of the match for numerous reasons. The first reason I wasn't a fan of the match is because all the shit Dream's done and you come out and do your full entrance, Roddy. Like, bitch, go in there and fight the motherfucker. Like, you still did the boom? Like, there's no time for boom.
Yeah, well, why are we still about doing, your like, wife. As much as I love your little, like, strip-teasy jacket thing, Roddy, like, I do, you know I do, but, like, this is a fight-on-site beef.
Yeah. Yeah, you left your boys in the back because you said you, this is like, he was going to get the man.
I wanted to hear, this is some shit where I wanted to hear, as soon as I heard Shock the System, I wanted to see you coming out like Usain Bolt taking off at that fucking ring.
Man, do one better. Do like Dakota did Tegan at the pay-per-view and jump him while he's doing his entrance. Like, if it's that real, then that's the disconnect that all of wrestling has for me. It's like, when it's on-site.
It's real.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if Cody don't jump MJF from literally the moment they walk down to the damn ring, unless MJF, and he might have put it in the clause, unless MGF has it clause legally that Cody can't touch him until the bell rings, I'm jumping him from the moment he walks out to the damn ring, right? But that's AEW. So that was a disconnect for me. Another disconnect was Dream is neither one of those guys are great brawlers. They're great showmen. They're great in-ring performers, but they're not great brawlers.
Roddy is technical. Dream is
stylistic.
Yes. Is the word I'm going to use.
Yes. So that was the other disconnect for me. But the question I want to ask for you is, and this is going to sound a little blasphemous, but I think we should give it some credence.
Ask it anyway.
There is a subset of fans who believe that the Dream is washed. That the Dream isn't the same performer, that the Dream isn't hitting like he used to, that he's almost slightly a caricature of himself. And the 5 months off definitely hurt, but that he's not the same guy. How do you feel? Do you feel that Dream is the same? Do you think that he's picked up back momentum that he had before he left?
I mean, I think he had so much momentum when he left that, like, it would be really hard to pick all of that back up. Absolutely. But, like, y'all, the tweets alone are, like, that is some vintage Dream shit. That is Say My Name level Dream shit. So, like, that alone, I'm just like, what you mean he not the same?
So, I'll tell you this. And you know, I love me some Velveteen Dream. I love me some Patrick Clark. He doesn't feel the same.
All right.
And I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. But I just know when I saw him come back, when they were about to literally, like, knock Ciampa's head off his shoulders, I was hype. One, because I figured it would be him. It couldn't be anything else. And two, I loved the way he did it. And maybe it's the storyline with him, like, going all Samoa Joe on Roddy's family. That's the disconnect. But there is a disconnect right now for me because he doesn't breathe the same excitement to me. It doesn't come off right now as must see. The things he's doing now, I'm talking about on screen, on Twitter, easily. Best Twitter game in the business right now. But on screen, I am not enthralled. I'm not forced to stop what I'm doing and see what he's doing. And the Dream's always been about stealing the spotlight. It's his spotlight to give, right? I love Dream. Anything he's ever done, I was even into his stupid little feud with EC3 because he's so captivating. I haven't been captivated. And it has been a very small... He's only had 3 TV appearances since. So I completely see that he needs some time to get momentum going again. But I've been counting down the days till he returned. And now that he's returned, he just feels like another guy.
I think some of that could also be a side effect of the time, not so much the time in terms of length, but the time in terms of when.
Yeah.
He was out because
he's missed so much.
And the things that he missed were things like the Survivor Series build, where they established that the NXT guys are on the same level as the main roster guys. Mm-hmm. He missed the Royal Rumble. The things that he missed were really big, important things. And so now he feels like part of the shuffle as opposed to he feels like an appetizer instead of an entree because he wasn't there when the entrees were being presented.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. That's a great point. And I think that might be what it is. I think that might be what it is. But it's disappointing because this is a dude who most assuredly, and I think unanimously was thought to be believed, would build the company around. Like, Cena handed the torch to Roman. Roman handed the torch to Becky and Seth. And, like, they would hand it to Dream. Like, that's the type of stuff that people were saying he would do. And still could and might, but I don't know, man. And I love everything he's doing on Twitter, and it's like it's giving me life, and I'm loving it. But you know one thing that bothered me? Maybe this is part of it. Remember when he came back, he showed up on the top rope, and then he started attacking all those guys? Mm-hmm. First and foremost, I think they waited too long for him to appear.
Mm-hmm.
I think. Because they beat everybody else up. And I thought him appearing, it should have been more of a even fight than him destroying 4 people. But that's a nitpick. I didn't like that literally the second he did debut and beat those guys up, he ripped his pants off to show Marina's face on it. I just didn't think that was the time. Mm-hmm. Like, right now, this is about you coming back and about you reminding us why you the baddest motherfucker in the game. You out here trying to remind us that Marina Shafir is Roddy's wife. I just didn't think that was the time, you know? And for a guy who loves the spotlight, he pushed it off of him. And I don't know where that falls into my feelings about the situation, but that definitely hurt him in my eyes.
I think that's a valid criticism. We've talked a lot tonight about how timing matters, whether it's the amount of time a match is given, whether it's the formula for how you tell a story, whether it's returning and being gone during really important things. Like, timing matters. And if you do something and the timing is off, there's consequence to that. You know, if you do something, if you're a wrestler and you are in the ring and you do something and the timing is off, you end up like draws.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, and I people who know what that means are like, holy shit, that's really harsh to even bring up. But like,
truth.
That's the truth, you know? And that's a really extreme example, yes. But the point is, if the time isn't right for something, it's not going to go well.
Yeah.
And so if it comes across as like this is poor timing, it totally makes sense that it would turn you off.
I think, and then also I think too, part of it is my growing, I don't want to say annoyance, but my growing apathy to the Undisputed Era as characters, not as in-ring performers, because they're still enthralling to me in the ring. And Kyle O'Reilly is like my spirit.
The king of facial expressions.
My God. His facial expression when he wanted to do the guitar and he was like, I ain't got a belt. Like, it's great. But I'm becoming apathetic to them as characters. And he's feuding with the entire seemingly... and then I hated the way it ended. Like, okay, Dream wins. It felt kind of rushed. They run in, beat his ass up, end of the show. What does that do for anybody? You know? It doesn't... Dream won the match. Cool. I don't remember that. I remember that he lost. That he got beat up at the end.
I was going to say that he got his ass beat.
So, like... It doesn't do anything for anybody. But we're nitpicking. I don't have a book. I don't have a pencil.
But here's something that also matters. Like, I said it doesn't matter who the face and the heel is in the story because, like, it's fun. But it does kind of matter that, like, the Undisputed Era is supposed to be this, like, hot shit heel stable. And, like, compared to what Dream is saying about Roddy and Too Roddy, like...
Oh, they're the faces in the situation. Well, Roddy's the face in the situation.
I was going to say, like, Roddy totally the face here. This man straight up... First of all, this man showed up with your wife and child on his gear.
Yeah.
Then this man come out here and A, question your manhood, B, mm-hmm. insinuated he was fucking your wife, and mm-hmm. C, talk about how you ain't fit to be your child's daddy and how he gonna be the new stepdaddy.
Dream's boy Troy.
Then he coming out here putting pictures and shit talking about, oh, don't tell him, but your wife gave me these panty gloves.
The panty gloves.
Your wife gave me these panty gloves. I can't sniff my fingers and smell the fun. All of that shit, and it's like, dog, that's Ciampa spitting on a wedding ring level heel tactics.
It's pretty bad. And I'm so glad they haven't shown Marina on screen, because you can't. Because it's going to make it worse. It's going to make it so much worse. Like, stay at home, Marina. Don't come out. Stay
you
in the back.
You would definitely have the night off.
Yeah. Stay in the back. Would you even say, even before this, just in general, that the Undisputed Era are heels, given the crowd reaction they get every time? They're never booed. They get the biggest reaction of the night. Their entrance is so choreographed that even the rest of the three do the boom.
Yeah, the first
and,
thing they
do. And they do the Adam Cole baby without the Adam Cole baby.
And here's the thing. When they first started doing the boom, that was one thing. It was really popular. It was cool. It's whatever. But, like, then they started doing the Adam Cole thing. And I'm just like, y'all.
It made sense when Adam was there.
But now you're doing it without him, and it feels real extra.
Yes. Yes. But they're so over as pseudo faces that and I don't know, man. And maybe it's a Full Sail problem. Maybe Full Sail is part of the problem.
Full Sail is part of the problem.
I don't want to say that because they're excellent and they've been great, but I'm starting to see, I hear it every day on Busted Open. I hear it every day on other podcasts, every day on other shows. I never wanted to give it credence, but I'm starting to believe that maybe they're part of the problem because it's the same people largely every week and they're getting the same reactions. But you go to Portland and yes, still Adam Cole is still stupid over as a babyface, but it felt more in line of what you wanted in Portland than it did in Full Sail.
Because the other problem with Full Sail, not only is it the same crowd every week, but it's the same super smarky crowd every week who's going to react the way that they want to react to whatever. And when it was primarily developmental, that wasn't a big deal. When it was primarily developmental, it was really cool, actually, because it was part of the ambiance of watching the show. And it was really refreshing at that time because the main roster crowds were largely pretty dead. So it was really cool to watch a TV show where the crowd was fucking amped.
And they knew the people who were debuting, so it made them look like stars.
Yeah, and it helped bring this like level of cred to them because these are indie wrestling fans, so they know all these indie guys.
Yeah.
And so like for a while that was great. But again, now that you're not developmental, now that you are the third brand on the show, like it is starting to be a detractor and not a good thing.
Yeah, and I see it now, and I don't like it because I'm a big proponent of that fan base, but I'm starting to see it.
I love them for what they represent. I love that they are a guaranteed hot crowd. I think that they are what 205 needs.
So that is the interesting thing. So TakeOver Dublin, which is the next TakeOver for NXT UK, is I think at the end of April, right after Mania, which is going to be pretty big. And also it's the first TakeOver for NXT UK outside of the UK. For those of you who don't know what the fuck I'm talking about, you think Ireland is on Great Britain. Ireland is not part of the UK. Northern Ireland is. So technically it's out of the UK, right?
Not technically, it is out of the UK.
Yeah, exactly. so that's a big move for them. 205 is starting to heat up in terms of they're having a consistent new roster. Oni's back. Mike Kanellis is back. They're getting a little heat. They need to get away from touring with SmackDown. But like some things are moving, things are happening. But I don't know, man. There's great planning. There's great execution. There's even somewhat of some nice cohesion. But it just feels like they're missing the mark in totality right now. And it's disappointing, man, because I think NXT Raw has been amazing for 4 months.
Yeah, no, my beloved SmackDown's been the weak link for a little while.
It has.
It's really unfortunate, but I kind of saw it coming when they moved to Fox. They had to change the way that they did the show in ways that I'm just not feeling.
It's not the Fox move, in my opinion. I think it's the uncertainty with moving from Eric to Bruce, because they had a plan and then they had to change that plan and do it kind of almost overnight. And you know, when you have a new guy installed as the head of creative over all that, the ramifications of that change are going to be shown within 6 months. We're still within that period. So I think after Mania, you get a chance for Bruce to really show his vision. And I don't know if it's good or bad, because Bruce ain't booked in a long time, but that's going to be all right.
They'll be all right because that roster is great.
They got the big dog.
More importantly, they've got his amazing cousins and hot ass Naomi.
Well, she's his cousin.
Well, yes, but she also deserves her own separate mention because she's fine as hell and amazing, and I'm gay and I know that.
Shout out to the fact that there is a advertised ahead of time women's championship match at Super Showdown in Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, but yay for the women getting to have a match.
Exactly. We could bloviate, shout out to your boy with that ST word. We could bloviate all night about the ills of Saudi Arabia and the negatives about that deal, about that country and situations involving it. For all the shit that WWE gets hated on, you cannot say that they did what they set out to do. Their goal in going over there, besides making money, and from a positive standpoint, given those largely innocent fans who have never had a chance to see, I said largely, who have never had a chance to see live wrestling, to get wrestling. But the goal was always, we are slight show, slowly but surely, interject and impart our women on them whether they want it or not. And they have stood up to that and proven it. And you have to give them credit for that.
I mean, I don't have to, but I'd be a dick not to.
I don't want you to be a dick. Like, not in this situation.
I'm going to say, yes, you do, just not right now.
Okay, that too. That too. End the night on this. We can get out of, we can get out here on this. End the night on this. This isn't NXT, but I'm just curious because next Thursday is Super Showdown.
Yeah.
Goldberg is facing The Fiend for the championship.
Uh-huh.
John Cena comes back next Thursday, next SmackDown.
Okay.
If you are forced to put two combinations of Bray Wyatt, John Cena, Goldberg, and Roman Reigns together in two matches, one of them for the title, one of them in a showcase match. Not showcase in the way I pronounced it and I said it for NXT, but you know, like a Mania-level showcase match. What are your two combinations?
Okay. So, here's why this is hard for me. I don't want to have to say this because I don't want him to do this fucking again. But the way that I book it is I have Goldberg beat The Fiend for the title, and then I have Goldberg and Roman fight for the title because I want the title off of Bray, but I want the title on a full-time performer. And
so why don't you just do Bray versus Roman at Mania and have Bray beat Goldberg?
Oh, because I want the title off of Bray ASA fucking P. Like, I love Bray. I love Bray. Don't get me wrong. But, like, this whole The Fiend is unbeatable shit, I'm just over it. And, like, I think that as much as the fans will be, you know, not happy to have Goldberg beat Bray, I think that for the sake of Roman's long-term health and viability with the fan base,
beating Goldberg is better than beating Bray.
The smarter move is to have Goldberg, who's already been booked as an invincible monster to anyone not named Brock Lesnar, beat The Fiend, and then have Roman spear the spearer and walk out of Mania with the title and have Bray and Cena have a wacky fun time showcasing that.
Well, okay. If we're going to get Wyatt's...
need John Cena to be in the Firefly Funhouse. Are you fucking kidding me?
Yes, John Cena absolutely. If we're going to see Wyatt Cena again, and maybe I'm on an island on my own, but John Cena versus Bray Wyatt at WrestleMania 30 is one of the greatest WrestleMania matches in history, in my opinion. It is one of the greatest stories told in WrestleMania history. Bray Wyatt had no interest winning that match. His whole goal was to prove that John Cena was really a monster. John Cena was so shook after the match, he went and ran and hugged the nearest kid next to him. That was a masterpiece. So it's only going to be better if they do it again. But sadly, if you believe, you know, Uncle Melty Poo, supposed to be Cena versus Elias, I don't believe that shit. But...
Yo, first of all, because you brought him up, obligatory, fuck Uncle Dave and his shit rag.
Well done.
Second of all, like, the thing is, you know, as I was saying, it's the reason you do this and you don't do Roman versus Bray is because we just got the fan base to stop universally shitting on Roman. Like, and it took him having... It took him having to beat cancer a second time to get
this. This shouldn't be a thing, man.
You're right, but am I wrong?
No, you're spot on. But it's crazy. They have to book. I was at the Royal Rumble live, right? You don't believe me? Listen to Carl. Carl was with me. They treated him like a king in the match against Baron Corbin. In the Royal Rumble when he came out, like 3 hours ago, he was like, it's like he saved us from Hurricane Harvey. Like he was J.J. Watt. And now all of a sudden we hate him?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So like for his long-term health and viability, because we just got the fan base to stop just shitting on him every second they saw him, you need to have something worse. And something worse is Goldberg, geriatric ass, showed a fuck up in Saudi Arabia and take his title, or take the title, and then Roman got to come in and be like, oh, hell the fuck no, I know this part-time piece of shit ain't come up in here and take my belt.
I'll tell you this, though, Kyle, and we can end it here. 10 minutes of Goldberg versus Roman, with Goldberg, like, not blown up, like, when, like with him having his win, it's going to be an awesome match. Like, 10 minutes?
I was gonna say, that's the key.
Yeah.
Because we know, and we know this from 20 plus years of footage and experience,
mm-hmm.
Bill should never be in the ring for more than 10.
And that's pushing it. 10 is pushing it.
Yeah. The only person in the history of ever who's been able to take Goldberg to anything passable above 10 is Diamond Dallas Page.
Only gave his best match ever.
Ever be able to take Goldberg in a match more than 10 minutes and have it be worth watching.
Yep.
So, like, if we can keep it short and sweet and to the point.
The irony of that is that was the show when Halloween Havoc ran long because Warrior and Hogan wanted to relive some 1992 shit or what, 1988 shit. And the pay-per-view feed ended right as DDP and Goldberg were starting. So they aired it live for free.
Yo.
Nitro. Yo. But that was his best match ever. That's such WCW.
The Tales of WCW, for those of you that are too young to know, you gotta watch it. It's just a hilarious train wreck in progress. I'll say this about the Superstar Showdown match. Once again, it'll be another Goldberg match where the entrances are twice the length of the actual match.
Oh, that's right, because The Fiend takes 3 minutes, too.
Also takes a good 3 to 5 to get to the ring. Between the lights having to come down, and then they play the Firefly Funhouse theme, and then they play the, like, goth rock remix of his original theme, and he comes out with the mouth lantern.
Okay, so, and you know what? Never mind, because I can't have you shitting on my boy tonight. Never mind. I don't have the energy for it.
Well,
you can find... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you can find me on Twitter at Dr. Schmores. You can find Carl on Twitter at Outsider Curvin. Even though he never comes on here, I will still shout him out because I love you, boo.
Yeah. Carl is shit. I love him, though. Why you got to be so mean to Aleister Black? I can't even talk about dude. Because I know you're going to shit on him. Why you got to do me like that?
Not my fault that your friend has no charisma.
So you can find me at It's Ray Cash, R-U-I-Z Mysterio, C-A-S-H, asking Desert Dollar Signs. I'm going to change my handle to Kyle Sucks, but then...
You know, I do, actually. So
that's not really helping the situation.
But you can find the show on Twitter at Outsiders Edge CS. Oh, of course, man. We are part of the Chairshot Radio Network at thechairshot.com, where you...
Always use your head. The one on your shoulders.
And don't forget, y'all, you know, we here at the Outsider's Edge are just some increasingly less young gentlemen out here doing what we can to make it in this world. And sometimes we're going to say some things that make Rance feel salty, like Aleister Black sucks at cutting promos.
An hour and a half of a podcast, that's what we talk about? Thank you.
Other times, we're going to, you know... fuck things up and forget our sentences in the middle of stuff, or we're gonna have to do the intro a million times, which happens way more than we'd like to admit. Yeah. But no matter what, y'all, just remember that we're out here just chasing our dreams, and like, you gotta respect that, right?
Maybe.
Because, like, last I checked, if you don't, well, we surely don't give a fuck.
Fuck 'em.
Thanks for listening. We'll catch y'all next time.